Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. We're looking forward to getting into a good discussion. We're going to actually start off in the Hot Topic segment. We're going to start off kind of where we left off last week with Larry Wingate. We're going to pick up from some commentary on that. Again, if you did not get the broadcast last week, be sure to go back and listen to it. Larry Wingate, who is the author of many books out there, but you know, it's a motivational, but it's kind of an attitude adjustment book, and that's why we had him on, and it was a really good discussion. Literally, a large audience listened to it and received a ton of feedback. So it's good to have you with us. It's July 7th. I hope you guys had a wonderful Independence Day, 4th of July weekend. And it's good to hear from many of you. I can tell whenever it wakes up and shakes off the three-day holiday and tries to shake himself back into a, I got to go back to work and I got to get back into this craziness. But we've got a good program lineup. Many of you have told us, Dave, I love having all of your guests on, but we really like it when you guys do the roundtable. So, well, backed by popular demand or request is the roundtable discussion. We will be getting into a discussion of what's going on in the markets, what happens with some of the things we're hearing about out there. When that happens, how do you respond? Getting into some of the regulatory issues, how to be responding to that. But unfortunately, Alice Alvey is not feeling well today, so she will not be joining us. She sends her greetings to everybody, and I tell you, there's so much going on there in Alice's world that we'll be commenting on. But anyway, it's good to have you with us, and we're pleased to have our listeners from all over the country. We have so many listeners dialed into us. I just checked it in. We are almost ready to cross over to 340,000 downloads. I just got some information from Mike Frattantoni. I spoke at the Austin Mortgage Bankers Association. That's Austin, Texas. Their luncheon last week. And Mike was sending me some information. Mike Frattantoni, we got to get him back on the radio broadcast again soon, by the way. And Mike was telling me that that he says that employment now within the mortgage world is about 275,000. That comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It's about 275,000. We have more downloads in our broadcast than there are people in the industry. I thought that was kind of interesting. So, again, a lot of repeated downloads, but it's so good to have you dialed in. We see many of you that are dialed in by the phone. We see you show up on our switchboard. Love to hear from you. I am giving shout-outs to those that connect with me. Best way to do that is through LinkedIn. Send me a message. Friend me on LinkedIn or on Facebook. Both of them is David Lickin, and love to get you on. Of course, you're welcome to send me an email as well at dlykken@mbs-team.com. Again, let's get into it. Starting off with what's going on in the markets. Joe Farr, good to have you with us. Doesn't look like we have got a lot of economic data for this week, but
it's always a light week.
So let's get into it. What you got going on? What's going on today? I haven't had a chance to much look.
Well, no, today it's market's about where it ended the day on Thursday. So started this morning down a little bit and rose enough to where, you know, there were some people considering price changes, but we're back down in the middle of the range now and have been there for the last hour or so. So maybe a quiet day today, which is good because we've had some pretty rough days here lately.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Yeah, so, the
jobs data just blew me away, especially on Thursday.
Really?
Wow, 288,000?
Well, even on, you know, the day before, it started on Wednesday, the ADP report came out and it blew away expectations at 281,000. And then on Thursday, the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out at 288,000, again, blowing away expectations. It was, I'm going to give props out to ADP. They've been kind of getting better at predicting or forecasting what you might expect in a jobs report. Each of the last 4 months, anyway, they have at least indicated an increase or a decrease, and then this month it was pretty much spot on. So I guess we need to start paying a little more attention to ADP. Both days, MBS prices fell pretty good, pretty hard after that jobs data came out. And for the week, we lost about 65 basis points in price. But, you know, Dave, it could have been worse. The jobs data has the wage inflation component in it, and that showed very little growth in inflation at 0.2 for the month and 2% for the year. And that's really got a long ways to go before it starts being terribly concerning, especially from what the Fed has said, because they look at wage inflation as becoming somewhat concerning if it begins to grow substantially greater than the other than the overall inflation, or, you know, 3.5-4%. So we're not even halfway to where they kind of view
concern about
the inflation being a concern, wage inflation anyway. Well, it's a good week for the stock market, though. I hope you're long your equities, Dave. Dow rose above 17,000. That's pretty good. Wouldn't have guessed that too many months ago. But
who would have thought?
The other economic data that came out, ISM came out a little below expectations, but pending home sales were a big surprise to the upside.
Yeah,
pending home sales rose 6.1% from April. It follows good new and existing home sales the week before. So all measures of the housing market seem to be improving pretty nicely.
Yeah. For those of us, Joe, that were doubting Janet Yellen's comments about we actually think things are going to improve. I mean, jobs we anticipate improving. Housing market should come back. We should, you know, she was somewhat tempered in her enthusiasm. But, I mean, she was very, what I would characterize as bullish based on some of the information. And I got to tell you, I thought, I think Yellen's lost it. I don't think she's got this figured out, but I had, based on what we saw last week. What about, you were talking about the income growth a little bit. We are looking at the number of jobs are up, but what are the jobs? It's still in the more in the minimum wage or down in the lower wage areas. Or do you have any sense on that?
This last round of jobs had a little higher quality job overall. I mean, it's still not great, Dave, but it's more people in the middle class seem to be more middle class jobs came out of that net job growth this time than what we've seen in the past, which is a good sign.
Excellent. Well, what do we have coming up for this week? Got some light week.
Back to your favorite report.
Lots of key. Yeah. Yes, it is.
The jolt.
You told me about it and told Janice, so I made it my favorite report after hearing you tell me that it's Janice's favorite report.
Well, it moved the market a good bit last time it came out because it really was way higher than expected. And this month's the expectation for this is just now the May report because it's got a little bit of a lag, but the May report is expected to show about the same number of job openings as the April report did, and that was the one that really blew away expectations. So we'll see what happens there. And then the minutes come out on Wednesday, and I'm going to stop saying that they're not going to move the market much. I know last time they didn't have much effect, but the two times before that they did. And so we'll see how that goes. And then we have Treasury auctions. These auctions are the ones that we need to pay most attention to with the 10-year and the 30-year on Wednesday and Thursday.
Interesting. What are your thoughts on the auctions? We've seen, you know, moderate, sometimes weak, then sometimes strong. I mean, it really depends. When you see the stock market at 17,000, attracting money into the markets, do you think we're going to see some weakness in these auctions, the 3, the 10, and the 30?
It's tough to imagine that, the yields are still pretty low compared to alternative investments. It's hard to imagine a great deal of demand coming out of the from the market for the auction, so we might see a little weakness in that auction, as you know, the 10 and 30 year anyway.
Well, Joe, I appreciate you bringing this to us each and every week. Lots of information, folks. If you are not using MBS Quote Line, go check it out at www.mbsquoteline. And to learn more, you can listen to this message. By the way, Paul Mahlo coming up right after the break. Some good information over on his website as well. So excited about it. But stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
And not only are we back, but we're back with Paul Mallo. So let's get in taking, if you guys aren't checking out the IMF News website, www.imfnewswebsite.com, you need to be. Great information here. Paul, did you have a good 4th of July?
I did. Went upstate New York, which is anyone who hasn't been upstate New York should go because it's the Adirondacks. I wasn't in the Adirondacks, but I was in Rochester and went through the Finger Lakes region. It's just a beautiful place. You know, it's people always think of New York. They think of New York City, and they forget that, you know, they never see upstate and Hudson Valley. It's, you know, I guess I'm being a boost here since I grew up in New York and Long Island.
That's gorgeous. But, it's truly
it's
beautiful. It's got wonderful diversity up there. And, I mean, just all over. That's a really pretty country. Well, I'm glad you got a chance to get away, but now you're back at your desk, and you're writing away. And there's some great information, again, on the website on here. Two new players to jumbo MBS market. Tell me about this.
Well, this is something we started hearing late last week. There's two banks, and I think they're fairly large banks. They haven't yet issued any jumbo MBS since the housing bust. They're working on two small deals, and it's basically been described to me as banks that want to make sure the MBS issuing machine works. So they're working on two deals, and just at press time, we got confirmation that Redwood's deal is going to start being marketed this week. That's about, I think it's roughly $301 million. So that's another, you know, jumbo deal. Redwood has been the most active issuer since the housing crash. It's good. I mean, is the jumbo MBS market back? No. Is it starting to come to life? The answer is yes. But we'll see. It's tough doing jumbo MBS deals and making money on the issuance. But, you know, it's getting there. So we'll see. John Bancroft crunched the numbers for the second quarter. They just came out. We crunched those right away. Fannie and Freddie combined put out $212 billion in single-family MBS in the April to June period. That's up 13% from the first quarter. Of course, it's down quite a bit from last year.
Mm-hmm.
But, anything in the positive is good. So, let's keep our fingers crossed. Purchase business is picking up a bit. Obviously, refis are slipping. So it's, you know, everyone knows that, and it's just sort of wait and see, and, it's still interesting. You guys, we've talked about this on the show before. The non-banks picked up market share from the mega banks. Doesn't seem like Wells Fargo, JPM, B of A are as competitive as they used to be in years past, and people blame that on the regulations and the capital rules, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So that's interesting. On the website, www.imfnews, we also have a preview of a bigger story that we published on Thursday. It's basically the FHFA, Federal Housing Finance Agencies, working on their capital rules for mortgage insurance companies. This is a big deal because no one knows exactly what's in it. We have some sources telling us one of the big questions for the MIs is what can count as capital, what can count as an asset, what has to be down at the MI subsidiary level. A lot of people are watching this. The big question is, all right, if you're coming out with these capital rules for the mortgage insurance companies, what's the phase-in period? And, you know, we're hearing that the phase-in period could be as little as 1 year. At least that might be in the original proposal, but we're also hearing that they're going to probably say, oh, it could be 3 to 5 years, and if that's the case, the MI industry will be probably happy as a clam. But keep in mind, a lot of these MIs have raised money through additional share offerings. They've raised debt. So no one thinks the MI industry is going to hit a wall. And, of course, you know, Fannie and Freddie need the MIs to reach, you know, lower credit score individuals, lower down payment. And everyone believes Watt is going to do whatever he can to help the MIs to some degree. Also had a story about Walter selling an excess strip. They apparently sold it for $75 million. This is tied to a $25 billion MSR portfolio. This is interesting because it's an excess servicing deal. It's to an affiliate, but that affiliate is funded by the York Capital, which is a private equity fund, I believe. So that was interesting. We have a story by Tom Ressler. Just an update. I guess eminent domain isn't quite dead. We have short takes, delinquencies creeped into a shell point offering. It looks like they'll be okay, but still, anytime anyone sees delinquencies on jumbo deals, they get a little worried. But listen, you know, you got to take some chances out there. And the problem with people get used to a mortgage market where there's no delinquencies, you know, it's sort of silly. Freddie Mac had another risk-sharing deal. We have a short by one Sherry Marlowe, my daughter, who is interning here. She had a short about Fannie Mae's National Housing Survey.
I was wondering if that was your daughter that's joining you in the business. That's awesome.
Well, she's an intern. I'm not sure she's joining us in the business long-term. But she's trying it out, so we'll see what happens. And there's an interesting M&A deal we're going to look into a little more. It looks like a mortgage vendor which trades on the OTC, Complete Financial Solutions. It looks like they bought a 23% stake in American Patriot Bank, which I know nothing about. I saw the release on PR Newswire just as we were going to press, and we threw it in there. So I'm going to look into that a little more. But anyway, the week is starting off. It's post-4th of July. This tends to be the dead zone for news in Washington. As far as regulatory and policy stuff, the Hill's not doing anything. That's a joke. But, you know, we might see some real interesting things out of the FHFA in the summer. So everyone's watching them closely.
It is always interesting, and you're staying on top of it. I did notice Sherry's name down there and a very similar last name, so I'm going, that's outstanding. Hopefully you've got family. I don't think there's a bigger compliment. My daughter's working with me this summer, my daughter Christina. It's really fun to have them involved. You're doing a great job. It's fun to see them, to get into it possibly. I may scare her off, so hopefully you won't scare your daughter out of a good, promising career in this industry because you do a great job, Paul. Appreciate you joining
us
and telling us what's going on. Always a pleasure and glad you had a great 4th of July. And look forward to having you back next week, Paul. Have a great week.
Great. Thanks again. Take care, Dave.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. All right. Well, Alice Alvey, we'd normally go over to her. I can recommend you go back and download, listen to her broadcast, the broadcast last week. She had some great information. Again, she passes on her warm hellos to everybody. If you haven't checked out their website, again, Alice's company, Mortgage U, got acquired this last year by Indicom, another outstanding company, which we have a great relationship with. And we're just thrilled to have Alice here regularly, but sad that she's not here with us today. So, Alice, if you're listening, we wish you a speedy recovery. So, anyway, get feeling better, you know. That's what I've been out in the pontoon with her and her husband and had a great time. They're great folks. And I want to say, did you celebrate a little bit too hard on the 4th of July, Alice? Anyway, greet Andy. Talk to you guys soon. We'll be right back after this brief break. We've got some more information. We've got Sam Garcia that's going to bring us some insights into the world from his perspective. And, of course, we got the Prophet Doctor, and he's never lacking some words of wisdom to share with us all. So we'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you with us. We're thrilled to have all of you join us. So many people, even after the 4th of July, I was wondering how many people would be here, but boy, got a good crowd again. Appreciate it. Let's get over to Sam Garcia. Sam, good to have you on the broadcast. By the way, I should tell everybody hello from Tony Garitano. He cannot make the broadcast, so we're going to dive right into it with Sam. Sam, good to have you here with us. Did you have a good 4th of July?
I sure did. How about yourself?
Well, it's always fun, and we're back at work, so let's take a look at what some of the stories that you're tracking, and then also some of the statistics. I always look at you. I mean, you've got good stuff. You track all the news, but really the thing, Sam, that you really seem to have a focus on statistics, and I wanted to ask you what the NBA published and sent me last week was the something around 275,000 employment. I want to see if that trues up with some of the numbers you're seeing, because I think we're all – isn't the Bureau of Labor Statistics the best source for that?
Well, it's a partial source. What you have to understand is they report mortgage brokers and they report non-bank lending employees. So that added up to 279,000 people, and actually the non-bank lending employees dropped a little, and mortgage brokers compensated. But we're able to take market data, market share data for banks and for credit unions, and also from NMLS registered originators. And using that information, we're at the actual estimate for the whole industry, including banks and credit unions, is more like 704,000 people. So you basically got about
half. Wow, that's encouraging.
Yeah. Well, that's probably quite a bit down from over the last 5 years, but it's much more than what the BLS reports, because they basically would report bank mortgage employees as part of banking. And so, a lot of the industry is actually at banks. That's where a lot of the originations come from. So we have to kind of up that number using, again, our market share numbers.
That is very fascinating. I want to I'd like to dwell in on that a little bit more, but that's, but let's go on. There's so much to cover here with the time that we have allotted, but I do want to drive into that. In fact, I'm going to call you afterwards to get some more specifics on that. So next time I speak, which is going to be next month, I really want to have those numbers, because I'm going to give you some press from the podium. All right, so let's get into some of the other information you have there that you're tracking and our listeners should be hearing about.
Well, another good piece of information was that last month in June, agency issuance, MBS issuance at Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae was up for the third consecutive month. So it was actually the highest this level this year for fixed rate MBS issuance. It worked out to $72 billion between the three companies, and it was Fannie Mae that led last month's increase. So a little bit encouraging, suggesting that second quarter numbers might not be quite as weak as had been turning down for a while now. But that's kind of an early indicator that we're of course going to expect some earnings statements to come out in the next 10 days or so, and that'll really give us a grip on really where origination's headed in the second quarter.
It's interesting. I was going to say, do you have any sense of what you're seeing from the data that you're looking at on the private capital markets? I mean, I'm starting to see more evidence. A guy, when I spoke at the Austin luncheon this last week, came up and handed me his card, private money, looking to buy non-conforming, income property kind of deals. So I was just wondering if you're seeing any of that, any indication of money flowing into our industry from an investor standpoint, buying up loans, non-conforming type product?
It's still just at a trickle. We see is just, a little bit of interest here and there, and, you talked earlier about there's a little bit of jumbo issuance going on. And of course, we've already discussed that jumbo loans have been priced better than conforming loans over these last few weeks, which, of course, or few months for that matter, which, of course, suggests that much more interest from primarily banks that are holding some of this jumbo stuff in their own portfolios. But I haven't seen anything significant, that suggests that we're going to see a less reliance on government for mortgage lending.
Yeah, I was concerned about that. We really need that back, and we'll have to see what happens. But I'm starting to see a trickle. We're grateful for a trickle. grateful to have something coming in. So what's some of the other information you have on your website that our listeners need to be paying attention to? I'm in there right now. There's just a lot of great information.
Well, you know, a couple of things. Fannie Mae's delinquency in May was 2.08%, and that was the lowest level that that company has seen since October 2008. Basically, we're starting to dip back to pre-crisis level performance, which is, you know, that's always good because if you're getting good performance, then you're going to get more interest from investors. And another, you know, thing we saw was HELOC and performance. Delinquency on that fell to 2.4% in May from 2.7%. Though there was a report released last week, interagency guidance from the bank regulators, and they're warning the banks, basically, listen, we've got a period coming up here where the draw periods on HELOCs are going to go away, and people are going to go from being able to pull out money from HELOCs to having to repay them, sometimes even at higher interest rates. So it's a big swing, and it's going to be trouble for some borrowers, and they're asking the banks and the financial institutions to get ahead of this, to warn the people, hey, this is happening, it's coming up, and to identify the risky loans.
Yeah, be aggressive in that. I think you've got a great article published on July 2nd on the HELOC late payments are down. But that's good. It was a good article. I caught it then and just looking at it again now.
That is the one that I'm talking about, yes.
That's the one, okay.
You got it right on the nose.
You know, a reverse lender accused of misleading advertising. Now that I look at some of the advertising that's out there, and I'm going, that seems to have been more the norm at times. I mean, I know there's some very reputable reverse mortgage lenders out there, but you know.
Well, you know, David, what I've seen in my which has been 30 years now, and back in the old days, we'd go down and we'd see some of these brokers operating and being very misleading. Those days are gone, and just the crop of people that are out there now, and they're registered, they're licensed, they're educated, is so much better than it was, you know, 20 years ago. So, you know, yeah, you see a few of these cases, but they're the exception, and of course the regulators are jumping on them as fast as they can.
Oh, yeah.
And of course the government's bringing in a good stream of income because of all these penalties and settlements they're collecting.
Yeah, well, I mean, we want the bad guys out, and misleading advertising has been just given our whole industry a bad name, so it's good to have them out of here. Sam, thanks so much. It's good to have you with you. I always call everyone's attention to the data that's there. This is a subscription service. Say, why would I want you to go pay it for a subscription where I can get some other information out there and I blog for free? Well, first of all, there's some great content you're not going to find anywhere else. But really, I tell you, it's the data that's in here, some great analysis that you bring together. It's just really, really well done, and I appreciate you being a part of our broadcast. And also, thank you for that shout-out you gave me on LinkedIn. That was really special. I missed it when you posted, but I caught it over the weekend. But thank you so much, Sam. You're a good friend. I value the friendship and you taking a few minutes out of your busy day to be here with us.
Enjoy it, David. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Have a great rest of the week.
You too. Bye.
Profit Doctor, you travel enough making these house calls, and it's always fun to have you join in on us and with us. So I'm just looking forward to drinking in the pearls of wisdom. So what do you have for us today?
Well, Dave, I don't know what kind of pearls I'm going to come up with today, and I particularly don't oysters.
But you know what brings about a pearl? You know, you've talked about this in one of the other segments. What brings about a pearl? Something that's really irritating inside of a shell.
Irritating.
So and so there's a lot of things that are irritating this industry right now. So there's a lot of opportunity for pearl creation. So.
Well, there was something that we're going to talk about in the hot topic section today, more of the kind of our thoughts on the comments from Larry Wingate from last week. And just to highlight one of those topics that we're going to be getting into is that he basically said that when people are whining about, complaining about, concerned about, because he uses all kinds of very colorful words, about volumes down, margins are down, costs are up, blah, blah, blah. And how are we going to survive? How can we survive? It's not possible. We got to change this. You got to secondary marketing. You got to give me better pricing and operations. You got to give me faster turnarounds and realtors. You got to give me better customers because these FICOs are bad. And one of the things he says is that if anyone is doing it, then anyone can. So if anyone is doing it, then anyone can. And I think that's those are pearls of wisdom. And we do the same thing when we are talking to people who are struggling. We'll say, you know, let me tell you the story of Casey Crawford. 7 years ago, Casey Crawford called our firm, blah, 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 another, the fastest growing independent mortgage company in the country with a run rate of, you know, $2 billion. And they're recruiting. They don't recruit loan officers. They turn loan officers away because people come to them faster than they can they're just it's just a magnet.
Yep.
So it is possible to succeed and it is possible to do well in this market right now, today. So there's a couple of thoughts on my mind. I wanted to just briefly hit on well, we can do this in any order you want to and however you want to do it. Because
well, let's get into a couple of these
mind,
and tease them. And, yeah, let's get tease this up and because we'll get into some of this in the Hot Topic segment. Go ahead. Yeah, let's give
well,
us one.
No,
give
these
us
aren't
one
Larry
of those
Winget
pearls.
Points. These aren't Larry Winget points. The rest of this now is just stuff I'm thinking about.
Well, go
I'm
for
thinking
it.
About servicing, and I'm thinking about acquisitions. Those are the two things that are hot on my desk. I actually literally am working on transactions in both of those two areas, both servicing assessments, subservicing assessments, MSR assessments, servicing acquisition assessments, and then also acquisitions of stock, acquisitions of assets, commercial banks buying mortgage companies, private investors buying mortgage companies, one mortgage company buying another mortgage company. And so just all of the pieces that fit into making both of those things work. And you know, you were mentioning about Christina being in mortgage, and you know, in our firm we've got several kids that are working, my son, you know, we got don't want to name names on the show, but we got people in our firm working in the business. And so I was doing a quick training class on Sunday, and it's, you know, there's so much that we take for granted. You, over 40 years, me, 35 years, you know, experience, Joe, 30-something. There's so much we take for granted that is just foundational stuff that we know that other people don't necessarily know. And the 20-somethings in our firm just haven't had the breadth of exposure. So when we look at servicing and we look at acquisitions, they seem very, very different, but the things that are similar about them is having an accurate assessment of the process and the ability to rely upon data. Because, you know, we in accounting, Joe and I are both CPAs, so we get a report and there's the initial thought that, well, the numbers must be right. Look, it's nice and structured and pretty and the numbers are lined up. There's commas, so everything must be good. And you gave the example when you spoke at the Austin Mortgage Bankers Association that just because the numbers look good doesn't mean that they are good. In fact, what's the first thing you check when you get a balance sheet? Does it balance? And
does it
you gave the example
of
a time when we looked at one and it didn't. So, you know, people are running so fast today to keep up with all the things they need to keep up with.
Mm-hmm.
And
so true.
They forget, you know, it's just do it fast. Don't let somebody else worry about the details. You like to talk about the analogy of the loan officer goes in, has a great conversation, forgets the income section, throws the 1003 to the processor, and the processor goes, well, but what about all the income information? You go, oh, that's your job to go get it. I touched it once. Touch it once and done, that's all you do. That's mortgage banking, right? Touch it once and done, doesn't matter if it's right. It's here, your job now to fix it. And so that's just how the business runs. And then we come to the backside. We're looking at an acquisition, and we're looking at servicing details. And you've got to be able to rely on the data. And sometimes that's a challenge because stuff flowing into mortgage is done so fast that you can't always rely on the data. So we got to put on our auditor hats and go back and audit some of the data to make sure it really is right, really is complete, and then keep up with all the regulations and all the changes. And it feels overwhelming, but, you know, you just do it one step at a time. You put one foot in front of the other, go through the testing, go through the process, evaluate the information, and come to the end of all of this with a great outcome and an acquisition that can be very, very effective for all parties concerned and a servicing operation that can be incredibly profitable. Joe mentioned about returns on treasuries. You know, Dave, you and I wrote an article several years ago called The Future of Mortgage Banking, and it ran in the Mortgage Banker magazine. One of the sections in that article that we talked about the return on investment, return on equity in a mortgage company. And we've been able to identify probably 100 of our clients who have an ROI or an ROE in the 20 to 50% range. And there's some that are higher than that. So you can look at mortgage banking and go, oh my gosh, look at this, the data's not right, the people are nuts, they're going too fast, how do they know it got it right? And at the end of the day, they're generating returns that are 100 times the return you can get by investing in treasuries. So why wouldn't you go there? Why wouldn't you do that? It seems so obvious to me that mortgage banking is a great place to invest. And we're helping people do that.
Yeah, it is a great place to invest, and money's flowing in here, and it's just making sure those of us that are in the business that are doing an intelligent, going about it in an intelligent way, and it's really one of the topics I wanted to talk about you in the hot topics, Andy, is money flowing into the industry, and how can a company position themselves to take advantage of it? Because if they're not ready for it, they can mess it up and pass up a huge, possibly company-saving opportunity. So very good stuff. Looking forward to having you back here in just a minute right after the break. And let's get into some of that. And appreciate your comments about Larry Wingate's broadcast. I want to talk more about that in just a minute. Folks, we're going to be right back with the Hot Topic segment right after this break. Good to have you with us. And be sure to go get your friends. Tell them about the broadcast. Get them in here. Appreciate it. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability.
With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals.
New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions,
transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business,
please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900.
Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us. We're going to get into a discussion about the guest that we had last week, Larry Wingate. A lot of feedback from it. One of the regular listeners to the broadcast, we've got so many, we appreciate and want to hear from you, but Luke, I hope I'm saying that quickly because I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, but he's a branch manager of Primary Residential Mortgage located in Fresno, has been emailing me back. We're talking about bringing on more guests to help on the sales side, to help continue to build up our listeners that are working in the sales, because there's definitely fewer transactions out there, and so how could we be more effective at getting them in? So that's one of the reasons I had Larry on. I think the best way to start Larry Wingate, is to really come up with a better attitude, and I think some of us struggle with attitude, so it starts with attitude, and then we go through processes, and we're going to get some folks from CORE back on, CORE Training. Rick Ruby, I'm a real fan of what he does, he and Todd. And then I was messaging back and forth with Shayla earlier, and I'm looking forward to trying to get some of those folks back on to provide tools about it. But it really starts with attitude. And so I want to get into that and start off with you, Andy. You had some definite thoughts about Larry's presentation. It definitely resonates with a lot of people. I got so many emails, Joe and Andy, from so many listeners. That was outstanding. It's one of those broadcasts I've got to go back and listen to again and again and again. But there's also, let's just leave it there, because there's no buts in the negative. It was all positive feedback I received. We did have some conversation afterward, and I want to get into that. So, Andy, some of the things that Larry said, you made good detailed notes about it. You talked about one of them already earlier. But can start right there, because I love some of the commentary you had in our post-radio show call last week.
Well, okay, Dave. I'll jump into a couple of things, because I think that there are some fundamental points that he makes that are essential for success in business. And I think that there's a way in which he presents his topic to be antagonistic, maybe, to be memorable, noticeable, because he's a salesman, he's a performer, his job is to make you buy his book. And so, and the content that he includes in his book is, you know, is good, but fundamentally he's writing books because you're supposed to buy them. So taking a little bit of what he said with a grain of salt, I do think there were a number of pearls of wisdom. And in fact, I've purchased six of his books from his website and already given them out to several other people. And just
wow.
A quick side note about buying his book is that it's actually cheaper buying it from his website. And I don't know if this is coincidence or he just happened to recognize my name from being on the show, but all of the books that I received had been autographed. They were all signed by Larry.
Really?
So with no note of anything to say, hey, Andy, great hearing you on Lickin' on Lending, blah, blah, blah. And it was just, they were just all signed. So I thought, well, okay, do they all come this way? But anyway, I looked at buying them on Amazon, looked at buying them directly from his website, and it's cheaper to buy them, if you want the paperbacks, to buy them directly from him. So that's what I did, and I got them, and I've already distributed them. So
wow.
I think that there's
that's good.
Rules of wisdom in there. I think we need
good.
To look at what he said and what the intent underlying what he said really is and how that's a key or a stepping stone towards success. I'm going to pick just one real quick here, Dave, and then throw it back so we can, you know, have this dialogue. But one of the things that he's very well known for, and let me do two of them real quick. He says that
mm-hmm.
he says that there's a, that people get what they want, and there's a very simple formula for this, because you want what you have because your actions produced your results. It's not what you say. It's not what you want. It's not what you say you're going to do. It's what you've done. It's what you do that generated your outcome. And so if you want a different outcome, then you have to change what you're doing. You have to, if you've always, and this isn't Larry, I actually learned this in graduate school at SMU, but if you always do what you've always got, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. So if you don't want to get what you've got, then do something different. You have to change your behavior. You have to do something different. And that's where personal accountability, I think, is the key point that he drives to. And I know that's part of what Rick Ruby does, too, is personal accountability, using the coach to hold people accountable, partnership in accountability. And so how do you get people to stop eating chocolate? Well, you have somebody watch them and slap their hand every time they grab a piece. So the whole notion of some of his point is personal accountability. And one of his elements of personal accountability is, he says, do what you say you do, when you say you do it, the way you said you would do it. So
mm-hmm.
do what you say when you're going to do it. So do what you say on time as you promised. That's one of his foundational points, and that's in his books. So, and everybody will agree with that, right? Oh, yeah, of course. I want to do that. I want to do what I say I'm going to do, when I say I'm going to do it, and the way I'm saying I'm going to do it. And then we all commit to that, and then 2 days later it's, oh, I'm so sorry. I got distracted. I got delayed. Somebody else did this. And then we start blaming everybody else, and we blame our circumstances to justify our behavior. When at the bottom line, end of the day, it was our choice to let the circumstances derail us as opposed to do what we said we were going to do. And that's a struggle that everybody faces, and the solution to that is in my new book, Dan, that I'm writing, and I'm going to...
That's so funny. That is funny.
So there you go. I'll step off my soapbox and let Joe comment if
there
too.
But I think that one of the things that I want to get over to Joe in just a minute, but I think one of the things that a lot of people do is that we recognize wisdom. We recognize, you know, truth and we go, that's a good idea. I need to adopt that. And that life shows up, and for whatever reason, we don't implement the changes that are necessary. Now, you and I are getting together for an executive planning session with Chuck, our other business partner, for 2 days this week. And we're going to be talking about things to do. And execution is always a challenge for everybody. So right off the top of your head, what are the enemies to execution from your perspective that you see when it comes to the clients that you're working with?
Well, the tyranny of the urgent is always the battle,
yeah.
because there's always the next thing, there's the bright and shiny thing, there's the news report about the earthquake in Uruguay, there's the phone call, and I think probably in our business, Dave, because it is about raging fans, so we do want our clients to be responded to, so if we've got a call and at the same time a client call comes in, where's the balance to say, oh, shoot, I've got to deal with this client call because it could be their business is getting sued, or it could be the next sales opportunity. But the trick about it is, how often does those calls really never come back. We always think that unless we answer the call right now, we'll never be able to talk to them ever again because they're going to die. Or they're on a cliff and they're falling and they're calling us from the cell phone while they're falling to their death and we'll never talk to them again. You know, that's mm-hmm. never the case, right? So
yeah.
The opportunity to talk to the phone call again is actually almost a certainty. And in fact, most of the time, frankly, Dave, I'm going to do a quick confession here. I almost, you're going to shoot me as your partner for doing this. I most of the time send calls to voicemail. Even if it's client calls, I send them to voicemail because it saves 5 minutes. If it's a relationship I already have, they're going to tell me, hey, Andy, I need you to help me with blah, 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 as opposed to, hey, Andy, how was your fourth? How's the family? How are you guys doing? Yeah, you know, we went to the lake, and, you know, after that, kid fell in the pool and blah, blah, blah. You know, you skip all of that, and I care about their life. I want to know that, but right now, I want to know what do they want.
And they'll
give me the what do they want on the voicemail, and they won't when you talk to them. So I make a little voicemail to get me to the point. I respond back when I can, and that way I still meet the obligations I met to be on meetings and do other things because I make the other people wait.
Well, there's no question that there's enough people that are struggling. We all want to engage with people. I don't think there's too many people unless you're just really, you know, an introvert or just really don't like people. But most people enjoy the conversation. But it's that component of our dialogue that is challenged, but that's where the relationships are built. So I understand exactly what you're saying. Listen, Joe, I'd love to get your thoughts on Larry's comments. I know you had some really interesting thoughts that kind of said, yeah, here's another side of this that I'd like you to consider when we were talking on the post call last week.
Well, a couple things I noticed was that in one situation, Larry'd say, I don't want the guy who has to work hard to get the job done. I want the guy that gets the job done without having to. And then the other side, so he says, I get here because I worked hard. And so there's always a little bit of that. But, you know, all in all, I love his quotes. They're simple. They're straightforward. They're philosophies that are, you know, they're right in front of you all the time, but mm-hmm. do you focus on them? On his website, there are a whole bunch of quotes that I love going back to. One of them talks about, and I mentioned this last week, don't be different because people will pay for unique, right? Which is kind of mm-hmm. cool. But in addition, he talks about some people think that they have to do the same thing everyone else does, but just do it better.
Yeah.
And his philosophy is that's a program for disaster. You need to find a unique purpose and a unique value, and with that you're going to be successful. I think that's especially true in an originator's world where we are commoditized and everyone's got the same rules to deal with, everyone's got the same products to deal with, everyone's got the same marketing restrictions to deal with pretty much. So it's harder and harder to find that unique spot, but boy, when you do, you're going to be successful.
You do, and that, I think we were talking about three things that everyone sells: price, product, and what? Experience. And it's the one thing that mm-hmm. we all have unique is the experience we provide. So it's really true. And I think, you know, you look at MBS quote line, you look at the experience you create. It's really fairly priced. You've got a really good product at a very great price. But you really create the experience, how you experience this and work with you. First of all, when they get the opportunity to talk to you, you're always so helpful, providing great information. But also, you're sending it out in such a manner. So I think you guys have done a great good job of following the Larry Wingate approach in MBS quote line. Is there anything more that we should go on with Larry Wingate? Because there's a couple of things I want to work on as I look
thing,
at the
Dave.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, well, be mindful of the clock. Well, one quick thing about Larry is that he says that he doesn't want passionate people. He wants people to do their job. And I would hate working in that environment. I love working with Dave Licken, where there is the distraction and there is the passion and there is the wow, what could be. And I love that environment. And so you really can't make one size fits all. There's lots of principles that he says that are true, but I love being around passionate people. And yeah, we do get distracted on occasion. And so, you know, when you have a choice between answering the phone or meeting your commitment of being on time for a meeting, you don't answer the phone, you let it go to voicemail, and that was my point.
Yes.
If you're not on the meeting and you're available, then of course you answer the phone because you want to develop the relationship. So you want to do both, but you don't sacrifice being on time because of the relationship. You do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it, and the way you said you're going to do has to be first over everything.
Yeah, I think why are we in relationship with each other? And it's really in some way, shape, or form, yeah, we enjoy each other's company, but it's really to get results. I mean, you and I have formed a great friendship, and Joe and I have formed a great friendship. I thoroughly enjoy sitting out at Joe's house out on the lake and just sitting there under that big tree and just visiting. It was so much fun. But at the end of the day, what really brings us together is results. I want to promote Joe. I want Joe to promote us. I want us to work together. I want to provide together service to the industry. You and I came together, Andy. I love sitting in your home. I love sitting and pontificating about all the neat things. But at the end of the day, it's all about getting results. So it's finding that unique balance between the relationship side of the business, which is there and should be there. And you do business with people because you are in a relationship. You enjoy them. But it's also those that are most successful are the ones that are in relationship with someone and they're getting results. And so I have a tendency to have to be really, really careful about the bright, shiny objects. But I got you there to help me make sure that I'm executing along with being my distracted self. So it is really a relationship, and I think that's one of the values when we get in relationship with people. They do balance us out, and we learn to get that balance in it. That's good, and I want to park the Larry Winget deal there. There's money flowing into this industry, and then I want to get over to Joe, talk about some potential that we're hearing about in the market. I got to go out there with a couple items. But, Andy, there's money flowing in our industry, and our industry needs more capital. I mean, there's thinly capitalized companies, and I would like to get your thoughts on the thinly capitalized companies. Do you really see them surviving and thriving? And the answer depends on the unique value proposition, but I want to get your thoughts on it. But they will always do better if they bring capital in. But how do they get ready for that? And I know we don't have a lot of time. That's a whole seminar, a 2-3-day seminar. So distill that down into some words of wisdom here for our listeners.
Well, I think that capacity drives volume, and volume drives profitability. And we have to have the volume to have the profitability. We also have an increasing fixed cost, and that's really the thing that's changed. And that's the thing that means that you have to have more capital, because in order for the fixed cost element to be minimized, the only way to do that is to increase the variable revenue. And so you have to increase volume, because if you have $10 million a month and you have a compliance person, or if you have $100 million a month and you have one compliance person, it's still the same cost, but when you weigh it over $10 million versus $100 million, the revenue generated from that makes the cost a tenth of the burden. So the point is reduced fixed overhead burden by increasing volume. Only way you can increase volume is to have funding capacity. Only way you can increase funding capacity is to have more capital. So roundabout way of saying, yes, you have to have more capital. Only the bigger are going to survive because of the fixed cost associated with compliance.
Let's talk then about how can you best prepare yourself to bring in capital that's out there. We know it's out there, and they're talking to us. The capital is talking to us. They want us to find them the company. So how does someone bring it in?
It's going to come down to what Chuck always talks about as the philosophical alignment. So I think the philosophical alignment that people talk about is investors are afraid of mortgage because mortgage tends to be driven by the next bright and shiny thing, make radical, irrational, sometimes reactionary decisions to circumstances without thinking through the impacts those decisions have. You cannot be that way to an investor. You need to put on your MBA hat, whether if you have one or not. You have to act like a sophisticated business person. You have to talk like one, think like one, process information like one, and speak like one. If you can't do that, your chances of getting third-party capital are very, very thin, because it is about the results, but it's about how it gets done and the perception the investors have of the mortgage company managers that's essential.
Good, good, good. Well, we're going to get into more of that, especially we're going to have some programs dedicated to that. And looking at that in September, I've been asked by several, Dave, help, could you cover some of this on a radio broadcast, a whole Hot Topic segment? So we're going to leave that there for then. Joe, I want to look a lot. Did you have one more thought, Andy?
I want to know what Joe thought about what I just said.
Oh, yeah.
No, I agree. I agree, Andy. Good. Well said.
Well, I think there's...
Joe, I value your opinion.
Yeah, well, when you're right, you're right, and it's yeah, I agree. That's the best answer, Joe. I want to talk about this. You looked at the Dow last week hitting 17,000, and
right.
I get so many people ask me, Dave. You mean we keep hearing that a correction is coming? Is there a correction coming? They ask you. It's kind of like there's almost an assumption there is. In many articles you read, you know what goes up must come down, and there is corrections are a part of the market. That's just the way markets work. So we're at all-time highs in the equities. When we see a correction, or I guess it's, is it correct? Do you share the view that it's when we see a correction on the equities and the stock market, there's going to be the reaction, and I want to talk a little bit about that to get some perspective, because I have seen people worrying about this, and I don't want people worrying about it, Joe. There's some things that you can do, and get Andy's in on this. Gosh, you only got 4 minutes left. Dang, this time goes fast. But thoughts on the market and at 17,000 and what we could see. Your thoughts?
Well, look at it like this. Rates are historically low. You know, I know we've been a little lower, but a very, very short period of time over the last 10 years have we not had rates this low, or have rates been this low. In addition, the stock market's at all-time highs. So in my view, something's got to give. Ordinarily, there's going to be one or the other, right? The types of things that fuel a stock market rally are the same things that cause interest rates to go up. So things got to give, whether it's going to be on the stock side or the rate side, is going to depend a lot on the Fed and how quickly they choose to begin to tighten monetary policy, which I don't see them doing anything to loosen monetary policy unless we have a major shift in things. So whether stocks can support these levels, I defer to others on that, but I do think that with both of them being where they are, one bubble or the other is going to have to pop. And unfortunately, I think that's on the rate side, given especially how low rates have been and how low they are historically. Continued economic improvement, whether it be faster or slower than we're improving right now, if it continues to improve, unlike the last couple summers where we had a little buildup and then a turnaround, I think that the pressure is going to be more on the rate side than on the stock side.
Yeah, so in other words, you anticipate the potential, you see the potential more of continued stocks, very bullish on the stock side, and because of economic news that's coming out, the job creation was great number. If we see what happens with the JOLTS report tomorrow, FOMC minutes, we see them can say, no, we're going to continue. In fact, we're going to speed up the tapering program and hasten along, all of which would put an upward pressure on mortgage rates. So that's what when you say something's going to give, it's probably the bubble will burst that rates aren't going to stay this low. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
That's what my feel is.
Yeah. Andy, any sense of, from your perspective, when you travel around, talk to a lot of these executives, any sense of what you're getting when you're traveling out there?
Well, you know, the discussion of the Dow 30 isn't really high on the list necessarily. And if you look at the Dow 30, what, there's only one financial institution in the group anyway, so it's deemed as a broad-based index. I mean, it's not that broad-based. It's the industrial. It's the big company index. And you look at NASDAQ, you probably get a better sense of the broad base. You know, rates got to go up at some point, and I'm surprised that people think earnings, because oftentimes stock prices are based on anticipated increases in value, which are almost always driven by stock appreciation or, more importantly, cash flows. Companies are going to be selling more stuff because people are buying more stuff. So companies make more money, pay more dividends, and stock prices go up on a cash flow basis. So I don't know why everybody thinks that the stock market thinks the economy is doing great. And,
Well, It's interesting to see where things are going. We actually are responding to questions I receive from listeners. So, listeners, if you want to get your questions answered, be sure to email me or send me a message through LinkedIn. Look forward to hearing from you. We're going to be back next week at the same time. Big special thank you to United Guarantee for being a sponsor. Be sure to check them out at www.ugcorp.com. Have a great week, everybody. See you back here next week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.